So tonight I'm going to be talking about the attitude in practice, and hopefully a wise attitude, because as we've been saying, and Charles has mentioned this the very first evening, it's actually the relationship to what is happening, to experiences, that is more important than the experiences themselves. And this is very new for many people. And of course, I'm going to explain what I mean by this. Okay, so wise attitude implies different aspects. And I'd like to begin this talk because this morning someone asked me how to listen to a Dharma talk, which I really like, actually. This person has probably not a lot of experience of listening to the Dharma, meaning the teachings of the Buddha. And it's always refreshing to have questions like these ones. So hearing the teaching is, of course, not only a support, but many times, you know, in hearing the Buddha's words, people in the old days were waking up. Actually, by listening with an acute sense of interest and probably an openness to receive the teachings, I must say, from the Buddha himself, so probably very inspiring. And people could actually hear them to the extent that there was a moment, and at times, total freedom from suffering, from clinging, from contraction, from pain. So how to listen to the teaching? Actually, I think the best attitude here is to have an attitude of openness, which includes receptivity and body presence, so that the awareness is not only contracted around the words. Right? Of course, we want to listen to what is being said, but so often we kind of narrow down the perspective and stay very heady when it's like this. So have a listening which includes all sense doors, in the same way as when you practice, actually, when you meditate outdoors. There's a ground of presence, and you don't need to shut any sense door out. Right? So if there's a physical experience, maybe, then include that. Maybe there's a word that touches the heart or vibrates in the field of, I don't know, the stomach or any part of the body. And it can be received. So there's a spaciousness. So the first aspect in relationship to wise attitude when coming to a retreat is to notice and to really have an awareness of the expectations that we come with. Because there's no doubt that we do have expectations, right? We hope for change. We actually come here and probably are not in a field where at the end of the retreat we will be the same as when we came, right? There's a wish for transformation. And so there's a number of them. And the more we're clear about what we have as an expectation, the more we can actually be a little bit less resistant when these expectations, these hopes, are not met. That's really a very wise attitude. So, there's a little bit of resistance coming up, and we are often getting into a sphere of experience which may be not exactly what we expected we would meet. And very clearly, this is the truth of uncertainty. Right? There's a fact here which is very clear. It takes a leap of trust, or even you can say faith, or devotion, whichever word speaks to you in terms of not knowing. And yet, bringing this attitude of unexpected presence And in that field of unexpected presence, you can notice, oh, there's an expectation, right? There's a hope to get this or that. You agree, right? That you've seen this. And many times, it's not like that, because life is not like that. And so it's very interesting that in practice, we kind of separate the life as if we were going to be some other Marcus or Emma or whoever, Patricia, is going to be different than who I am in life situations. And so we need to really adjust and accord that who we're going to be meeting is ourself. There's no doubt. And yet there's a possibility, a committing to practice, which is very helpful, because this gives rise to understanding what actually it is that we want, that we expect to find. So we sustain the attention as best we can to meet any experience. This is wise attitude, really wise attitude. Because we've been saying again and again, and it's so helpful to hear this, there is no wrong experience. Can you open your ears and all sense doors? We need to hear this over and over again. There is no wrong experience in practice. And actually, I love this line of the Dalai Lama who says, the difficult experiences that we have in practice are even greater fuel for understanding than the pleasant ones. So trust that every one of them is here for a purpose. So this is how we grow. And we begin to sense and notice the ideas we hold in our mind in relationship to what we think is appropriate. How it is that when we finish a sit, for example, we begin to evaluate. And if it's not happening to you, then great. If you haven't had this little thought, oh, this one was good and this one wasn't so good, and even if we've been on retreat before, right, we have this little commentary going on, what happened in the last retreat, which is not happening this retreat. All this is happening at the level of the thinking mind. And we have plenty of layers of ideas about what the practice should look like to be good practice. So wise attitude helps us, because I'm pointing to things here that I'm sure you're experiencing. And it's normal. But rather than denial or saying, oh, this is not part of the practice, I shouldn't be in this mode, just notice. Know that that is happening. And the more we'll be really realizing that it's part of the meeting, then we can actually go beyond the limitations of who I take myself to be as a meditator, and go beyond the limits of what we think about ourselves. There's an incredible way, an attitude of allowing ourselves to deepen the understanding, not only of ourself, as I said, but everything that we understand from this experience of cultivating mindfulness awareness helps us understand others. Because we're all interdependent. So it's no small task to understand maybe the value and the way that another person is interacting with ourselves. So this is the first aspect, to really clarify the way that we have expectations and the way that we are noticing how we evaluate the practice as being good or helpful. then there's a quality where when we begin to stop the busyness, meaning the actual evaluation, judgment, and sense of this is right and this is wrong, when we begin to let this be a little bit more settled, there's a field of experience which shifts from just mental, being thinking about things, as Charles was mentioning last night, to the actual experience, to actually feeling a sensation rather than the thought about the sensation. And this is not an observation. It's an actual quality of presence, the awareness. So it's not so much observing from the outside, where we have a sense of me here, the meditator or the observer, being observing the experience. There's, in this encounter of connection, an actual experience, a felt sense experience, there's actually a connection where we don't stay at a distance, but we're actually completely in tune, intimate with the experience, and there's no doubt that there's an awareness. This is what we call being aware. There's an awareness of what is happening. We're not lost in the experience. So that comes along very naturally when we begin to be in touch with, of course, the wonderful quality of mindfulness. And we begin to trust mindfulness a little more and a little more. And it does open us to feel maybe some emotional pain or some body pain, something that we are not at all used to in our daily life because we live very much at a distance from ourselves. And this is just the way that we're so kind of conditioned to look outwardly, to be really in a sense of presence where we're drawn to look outwardly. And here, the whole prospect is to be in touch inwardly. So it's healing. Even if there is some emotional pain, and I remember my very first retreat since, this is a very long time back, but it's funny how a first retreat, you really remember it. It's very alive because it's the first one probably, and it's so new, and you don't have plenty of ideas about what it should look like, which is great. It's like when you go to Asia the first time. I don't know if you've been to Asia, but my first trip to Asia, I can remember it every second, you know, I really remember each and every moment because it was so exotic and so special. Since then, I've been 1,000 times to Asia. And that taste, that flavor of that first time was actually not there. It's different. You have, you know, to make it up for it. So the first encounter with practice was also a week retreat, just like this one. And I remembered having thousands of tissues. I came and I knew I was coming to practice with a lot of emotional pain, a lot of suffering in terms of my life being really difficult. And I knew that it was not going to be easy, but I didn't know to what extent. Because we don't know until we're in the situation. To this day, I can't believe I stayed on that retreat. It was just so much hardship. And there was a sense that as I was doing a step, as I was supporting my practice with mindfulness, there was also a feeling that even though it was so hard, it was healing. It was so healing. Finally, what had stopped was the running away from that pain. And this can happen with body pain, it can happen with emotional pain, but there was a huge shift which made me realize, oh, this is so painful, so hard, And thank goodness that, you know, the Buddha's teachings is all about understanding suffering and the cause of suffering. So it made sense. It wasn't me that was doing the practice wrong, which, of course, I thought at first. Huh? You think, I haven't come to meet more suffering than I had before going on retreat. And yet, this is the invitation of the Buddha, right? Rather than overlook it or deny it or pretend that it's not there, which is exactly what we do in our lives because it's not comfortable. It's definitely not comfortable. It's not easy. But by the very stopping of the running away to not feel the pain, there is a transformation happening that we're actually allowing. And in that very meeting, there's practicing sitting, walking, and we may have the idea that we're going against ourselves, that actually this is not helpful. And for the very few days, I've thought, oh my gosh, this is not helpful at all. I'm in more pain than when I came. And after a few days, I understood what I just shared. Oh, so much healing by stopping the running, stopping the busyness, stopping to pretend. And that truth, even if that truth is painful, we have a big insight. We don't need to accomplish much. It's happening. There's the insight that the trust to stay in tune, turn the attention inwardly, actually meeting our very mind, is the exact appropriate behavior. And unimaginable that I'm sitting here so many years later. To that extent, did it have an impact? You know, it's amazing because it really made a shift. So we don't like a lot of it. Is it not true? I mean, definitely if we've been on retreat before, we can sense and experience and have a very clear, direct experience of what I'm sharing now. Right? If it's our first retreat, we may have doubts. And it's totally normal to have doubts, right? But a lot of it we don't like, and it's normal. And this is exactly why we do the running away, or keep ourselves busy, until we actually, something says, hey, wait a minute, I need to look a little more closely. There's something calling. And often it's really a mystery, what makes it that actually we're called for looking inwardly, doing a retreat. It's still quite unusual, right, nowadays. I mean, more and more people come to practice and are interested in growth, understanding, whether it's spiritual or personal development, however it is happening. But it's still rare. It's amazingly precious to have some seed. I don't know what inspired you to be here, but it's quite amazing to be in this very situation and actually have the potential to wake up and to transform the conditioning, the habitual tendencies, and liberate the heart-mind from contraction. So this is really a very big aspect in terms of wise relationship and wise attitude. The second aspect with wise attitude is we begin to notice how we endlessly and endlessly in this very meeting want the pleasant and avoid the so-called unpleasant. What we often call wanting the good and avoiding the bad, right? So we are full of preferences. Have you had preferences today? No? Yes. And how amazing it is that we run our lives by endlessly trying to fuel the preferences, meaning go for the pleasant, endless search to get more of comfort, pleasant experience, sensory experience. And here we come, and then we say, oh, I want pleasant in terms of spiritual experience. And so we come, and we want the pleasant in terms of practice. Right? Exactly the same movement. And here there's an insight. And I'm sure we've all had it, but it's worth, again, underlying it and really noticing it. What is the insight? It's a huge discovery. When we begin to understand that actually, as much as we can walk and sit, and this is why, actually the sitting is in this form, so much simplicity, so we don't go for the nice, pleasant, you know, yoga session or whatever really good experience we could have, but we sustain a sense of attention to just be simple and look more deeply into the condition. And the condition is so revealing that actually we cannot control our experiences. As much as we can have preferences and wants, in reality, we don't have much control. We can't really choose. Did you choose to have a sit just that way and it happened just the way that you chose? No. Impossible. This is a big insight. It's very helpful. It's revealing when this is seen. Not just thought, and that's why we practice. It's all based in experience, meaning actual experience, contact. It's not just hearing me that you'll say, oh yeah, I get it. If there's a transformation, it happens at the level of the heart and at the level of the body. So we begin to understand really deeply that everything we go through is exactly here because of certain previous conditions. It's the law of nature. That's what the word dharma means, actually. The natural law that we understand certain conditions will bring certain effects. And this is why there is a chain of conditions. And that chain of conditions is that we can no longer be maybe so contracted in relationship to unpleasant, and we begin to open up. So the meditation, especially if we are new to this practice, we need to hear that it's not about getting good experiences. This is not the aim of the practice. And I'm underlining this because, you know, there are certain ways that this practice is now kind of flourishing in ways where we're just, you know, for the sake of well-being. And there's no doubt that for me, it really is being honest and sincere that there is a much deeper understanding. And these teachings are teachings of liberation. And I think, you know, Charles said this, if you want really good experiences, there's a much better place to be. Holiday is very clearly a way that you do replenish and you get some pleasant experiences. So a certain kind of balance of attention is needed. If you're too much in discomfort, then it's impossible to stay connected. So the wise attitude is exactly that, to nourish the wise balance. A balance between relaxation, which we've been stating, receptivity, not forcing, not striving, and yet connecting, staying connected, curiosity and continuity. So this is a very subtle balance, but this is the wise attitude towards clear seeing. And this takes a lot of skill. It's really not done just like that, because we always have different types of energies, right? We're never the same. Experiences, the way we feel, the way we sleep, conditions, the way we are the next day, the way we eat. If we digest well, we'll feel a certain way. If we don't, then there's another type of experience. So this takes a lot of patience. It means not only being with the body sensations or breath, but also at times when it's difficult, you really turn the attention toward the care and the kindness. In the very way that we've been doing this afternoon. Right? This quality of, oh, it's difficult, I bring some kindness, some care. And when there are, like I described, emotional pains, for example, I was given this advice on my very first retreat, where it had been so difficult that the invitation from my teacher was to look at the trees, to replenish the heart in terms of getting some balance. So it was not at all avoiding the pain, but it was more to be able to sustain the quality of balance in the mind, to also be able to see the beauty of nature. And that supported some spaciousness. So that's wise attitude. See, all the ways that we actually relate to experience in a way that is helpful to continue and to deepen the connection, to see clearly. So the third aspect is the invitation then to actually not make things different than what they are. That's the third aspect. How much we can learn in terms of manipulating all the strategies we may put in place in order to get something, which of course, to get something which is not here, right? That's a very helpful thing to look at, to really notice. Some of us will maybe have this driving mode, right? Wanting to get something out of the practice, which is often something which we have in our DNA, right? If we're a striver and we want to accomplish things in our life, we'll have the same attitude in meditation practice. So we relearn to relate to experience in a way that it's more caring than striving. Because striving heightens the level of energy, but it's forceful. And what happens, it's pushing you out of the moment. It's actually not supportive to meet the actual experience. It's pushing yourself to the next moment rather than staying with this moment. And we always want to be with this moment, the very quality of willingness to stay steady and open to present moment awareness. So what is the quality of willingness that supports? There's two. Rather than striving, forceful, making too much effort, one is interest, curiosity. And how does that interest come along? You can ask sometimes the question, rather than wanting a change in terms of the experience. I don't want this one, I want another experience, which of course happens a lot of the time, as I said. You can ask a question, what is actually happening now? What's the momentary experience? So that raises the interest, right? We wake up and there's a willingness to connect rather than disconnect. And the second quality is to trust that we can learn from any experience. When we actually hear this, any experience is worth being with. because we can learn from it. There's a shift. So much less struggle and more willingness to stay connected, stay tuned. So in the Buddha's teachings, he invited, he didn't command. And I really appreciate this fact. He said, I invite you to come and see for yourself. The term which is used is ehipasiko. Come and see. Come and examine these teachings. And notice, experience them for yourself. If they're worthy of your attention, and if they lead, they're onward leading to a release of pain, or to an understanding of the cause of suffering. So it's amazing when we have that type of motivation, because a lot of the practice lies on the motivation, the intention, the inspiration, rather than the forcing or the striving. So this touches upon the quality of effort. You know, we can ask ourselves, how much effort do I need to put in this? What type of effort? And you ask yourself that. It's quite sustained, the effort, right? I mean, this is really quite intensive, actually, when you think of the schedule. But it's an ongoing quality where the momentum in relationship to mindfulness will come from the steadiness of attention. And for a long time, I didn't understand that. It was fascinating. As I said the other day, you know, I loved sitting. I didn't like walking so much. Maybe you have the same thing. So I would really put a lot of kind of energy in the sittings. And then, normal life. And then I crank again, put the effort, sitting, and then, and it wasn't really fruitful, beneficial. And so many times the teacher would explain and say, walking is as important as sitting. Sit less, walk more. And I just didn't want to listen. It was just so interesting. I just didn't want to listen. Because sometimes we don't want to listen, right? Until I was really caught into an imbalance of energy. What happened? I was very concentrated to the point that the concentration was so clearly manifesting that I had what we call sinking mind, meaning when there's low energy and there's concentration, boop, you get absorbed, but you don't see clearly. There's no awareness. There's no alertness to the quality of presence. Lack of investigation, right? And what I noticed, what was happening, is that I was attached to the pleasant, born out of concentration. And there was attachment. Until I was willing to see this, it took quite some time, I tell you. But I was banging my head against the wall, you know, like forcing. And it was forceful. It was striving. And it wasn't beneficial. So there's so many ways that this mindfulness in continuity, steadiness, but gentle, soft awareness. So it's not putting on the gear and then whew, break, full force. It's a steady, ongoing continuity. And I think it's really helpful the way that actually people are teaching nowadays. These instructions are really giving an outline which is quite clear to help deepen the understanding, because it's all about understanding. It's not so much about just calm and quiet. And we go through phases where we just want, you know, the calm. So again, we don't want to meet the pain, emotional pain. And this was exactly what I had seen. I first saw, oh, so much emotional pain, went through a phase, transformed how healing it was. But then on the third retreat, there was again some resistance, of course. And I knew I had that experience. So I found a strategy. And the strategy for me was kind of, okay, let's calm, concentration, and get attached and not touch the suffering until the next round where I really understood this has to be more balanced. I need to really bring up some interest. So it's all really in the support of what is onward leading to understanding. This is the purpose, the aim of the practice. Wisdom. Right? Wisdom meaning understanding how our mind functions, how our heart functions, and seeing more and more clearly, and the result is letting go. So what I can say so many years later is the entire teaching is about more freedom. And it's amazing how each and every step, when we actually open our mind and heart and are willing to look a little more closer, and there's kind of a motivation factor to be interested in all of the experiences, not just strategize to just find what we want to find. This teaching teaches us all about freedom, how we actually taste the freedom of a moment when we see clearly that there is an emotional pain and there isn't the fuel of reactivity towards it. And this is exactly what we call the relationship to the experiences. So the experiences are not good or bad, right or wrong. They're what they are. And we're constantly be in a world and in a space where some will be very pleasant and others will be unpleasant. It's how we relate. So in the teaching, there are five types of, you can say, experiences, mind states that are highlighted that we want to be clearly noticing in terms of our relationship, right? The first is to notice, you've all had this, so it's not something that's going to be a surprise. It's the wanting mind, right? The wanting. The desire. The desire to get something which is not here, right? It's called tanha, meaning the craving. And it can be going all the way to kind of obsessive desire. We want it so much. And it's not all forms of desire. This type of desire has some flavor of stress in it. There's a contraction, and it's stressful. So it's painful to feel that type of desire, the wanting mind. And of course, then the other aspect, it's kind of two phases of the same hand. You have wanting on one side and not wanting on the other. Right? So we want the craving for the pleasant, and we have on the other side the not wanting, right, to feel the unpleasant. And we flip-flop again and again from one to the other. Wanting, not wanting, wanting, not wanting. So these are the two main ones, called often attachment and aversion, right? The third, called kind of a difficult mind state, is the dullness of mind, or sleepiness, or lethargy, or even in terms, there's also this translation as laziness, right? When no interest, and there's a lot of dullness. And the fourth here again, third is dullness on one side, and the other, the fourth, is restlessness. So these are two extremes, and it's very much about the energy, right? When there's an imbalance of energy, we will be in the presence of restlessness, and on the other side, there's going to be dullness. And the last one is doubt. And it's fascinating, I feel, that doubt is in the spectrum. It's so interesting that doubt is here. We can really understand, oh, wanting, craving, that's a big one, attachment. Aversion, of course, that's also a big one. And then restlessness or agitation on one side, dullness or laziness on the other, these two are in reference to energy field. But then the doubt, you know, it's the skeptical doubt that keeps us from practicing. All these thoughts that we may have in relationship to, it's not the right time, it's not the right style of teaching, it's not the right teachers, and it's mostly, which is even more kind of conducive to be a difficulty, and it's mentioned in the test, it's doubting our capacity to actually do the practice. Self-doubt. Right? Preventing ourselves from practicing. So we want to notice these. They come up. They will come up. These are strong habitual tendencies. We will all have them. And I still have them. There's still moments there's restlessness and agitation. And still moments when, oh, there's dullness and there's sleepiness, right? And of course, sometimes wanting. They're part of the condition, of the human condition. So they're not wrong. They're just energies that each human being experiences. So the invitation of the Buddha is to learn something about them, right? When we meet them, what is happening? We don't have to retreat when they're present. Right? The energy may be strong at times, right? The pull to want something. I really want, I don't know what it is, maybe, what have you wanted today? Something, right? Probably wanted another experience, or wanted to be somewhere else, or dream state of something, right? Connection, maybe. A sense of contact with another person. Anything. Anything. The sense of craving, right? Which is very strong. And then the other side is, oh, body pain. Really pushing away. Resistance. Right? So this is the push and pull syndrome. They work together. If wanting this other experience is present, then there's a push away of the present one. Right? And if we get tired, then we have agitation because we've been pushing and pulling, wanting this and not wanting that. And then what comes is doubt. We don't know where we stand anymore. So it's a whole spectrum that goes together, actually. Right? There's this whole interesting phenomena that when these mind states are present, usually they fuel each other. I want, but I don't want, and then I'm restless, and then I'm agitated. And then, of course, I'm dull, and I can't do it anymore because I lose energy. And then I doubt. Gone. I want out in that moment, right? And it's fascinating to notice this. So, we speak of wise attitude in relationship to these mind state. When these mind states are present, and this is so, open your ears, they allow for a deepening of the understanding of the human mind and heart. We understand something very deep about the condition. Every one of us. It's very helpful. We learn how to work with them. And we learn how to behave in a way that we can stay in balance. They will arise, and the relationship to them is to nourish the mindfulness and trust that mindfulness is onward leading to not resist, rather to allow, because they're just passing experiences. They come, they go. And this is so amazing. They're not here forever. Have you had the same mood all day long? From this morning up to now? How many moods did you have? How many moments of maybe calm or joy or interest, and then dullness and boredom, and so many types of mind states, right? So we ground our presence and we can begin to have the insight, wow, this really changes, and it's very alive, this process. So we begin to let go of the fight of the struggle against them. How? By staying present with mindfulness. We don't need to interfere. We don't need to do anything. And this is so amazing, because we think we need a tool to actually get rid of one or the other. The very holding, making the space for these mind states is healing. And there's a transformation. We don't need to hold on tightly. The absence of struggle is the freedom. In the very same place. See, this is huge insight when we begin to actually experience this inside ourselves. Because there's a wrong belief. We have really an illusion, and we're in ignorance, when we think we need something else, and we get rid of this, then everything will be fine. Right? And we can go through this so many times until we really get it. That it's okay. And this is why we're in this situation. We go through this so many times to understand the process of, it's okay, I can allow. And I don't need to feel desperate when unpleasant is here. And I don't need to feel extremely highlighted, so we stay balanced and grounded in the good and in the unpleasant. There's what is called equanimity. And this is quite amazing when it starts to happen. There's spaciousness and there's a lightness of heart. So these are few wise attitude. What happens with time is that there's less and less contradiction. And I think that's really powerful. There's less and less contradiction between the expectation, the hopes that we have about the practice, and what is actually happening. There's a meeting, and we actually have a sense of, oh, there's an aspiration, I have an aspiration for change, which is totally normal. Who would come without an aspiration for change? But the aspiration is very different from expectation. The aspiration is onward leading. We have a trust there. We have a trust that builds, that everything can be included. If there's expectation and hope, then it's wanting, it's grasping. And how do you know the difference? The aspiration is an inclination of heart, and it stays open. There's trust. Expectation, we're very drawn and attached to the outcome. This is so important, right? If you are attached to the result, then of course there's grasping, there's a holding. And in the wise attitude, you begin to notice the difference between, oh, there's a huge difference between aspiration, a good motivation which keeps you practicing, and constantly look at the attitude of expectation. Hope, not getting desperate, losing it, and again doubting. So we don't practice to reach a specific state. And when we do, we notice it, and we just notice this. Okay, I'm looking for something. I want something from this. And the looking is enough, right? We can just trust feeling a ground of reality underneath our feet. So this letting go into being mode, really this letting go of wanting, grasping, is actually what we deeply yearn for, is to live our life a little more closely and have an appreciation for what is, rather than a dreamland of what isn't. And it's actually happening with practice. This is what's so amazing. And if we've practiced before, we know. There's a real sense, deep sense, of presence. Whatever it is that is happening, we understand that there's a completely revolutionary and transformative quality of presence when we just begin for one moment to allow. Allow the pain, allow the emotion, and not fight against it. Incline towards letting it be. And it takes time. It will take time. There will be worry, there will be fear, there will be sadness, there will be joy, but we don't add resistance towards the painful. What means that we don't add fuel to the fire. So this is a huge potential for liberation. And mindfulness is the ground with which we work. And of course there are other qualities, many other qualities actually. But it's true, it's already the mindfulness that is giving the potential for liberation. Each moment we discover something very meaningful when we allow and let be. So it's, this mindfulness has this ingredient of acknowledging, knowing what's happening, but there's a whole process of allowing, right? Of welcoming, of it's okay. Because usually what we do, okay, I know it, but then I resist it. That's what happens, right? And so when there's resistance, okay, there's resistance, and it's okay to feel the resistance. We bring care, and then we understand that maybe the object of the meditation is the wanting and the not wanting. So this aspiration begins to be mental, and we think, but then it has a heart quality. There's a real sense of grounded presence in the heart, which is a taste of trust in the very process. And it grows in that way, where it's not so much mental anymore, right? It's not a mental decision, okay, I'm going to do aspiration rather than expectation. It really comes from the fact that it's trusting in mindfulness that is onward leading. So I'll end with a quote from Jack Kornfield. He says, "The wisdom of the heart can be found in any circumstance, on any planet, round or square. It arises not through knowledge or images of perfection, or by comparison and judgment, but by seeing with the eyes of wisdom and the heart of loving attention, by touching what is with kindness and compassion. All that exists in our world." So this is from a text which is called, it's a small text called Offerings, Buddhist Wisdom for Every Day. And there are many kind of beautiful quotes in that book in relationship to Dharma practice. So we don't need to change anything. We just need to progressively sustain, connect, allow, and have this wonderful opportunity and treasure it, that we are here to be able to really deepen the understanding and the connection, to allow ourselves to free ourselves from the burden of grasping. Okay, let's sit for a minute just to allow for the words to settle.